Good morning, everybody. This is Turning Towards Life with Lizzie and Justin. It's past 9 something on Sunday morning, 9:05 on my clock. We are here for, I think, episode 56 of our project, which is called Turning Towards Life. And if you are with us live, welcome here. And if you're listening later, because you have a way of catching up with us and you're in a different time zone, welcome also. We're very, very glad that you have joined us. This week we have a lovely source chosen by Justin, and I think that's all I have to say.
So I'm going to say good morning to everyone too. It's always such a delight to be doing this, and welcome everybody to week 56. I was particularly mindful, Lizzie, when you were speaking about there might be people who are joining us for the first time, and we're so glad to have you with us if you haven't been following for 56 weeks, but this is week one. And one of the things that you can do if you're so moved is to, if you're not in our Facebook group, is to get into the Facebook group, and all the instructions to do that are on the Turning Towards Life website. And then you can join in the comments. And sometimes there's a fabulous conversation that arises from what we've been reading and what we've been talking about. And we'd so welcome you there. And the only other thing I want to say before maybe I dive in and read this source for this week is for any of you who are interested in coaching, which is what one of the big things that Lizzie and I are really dedicated to as part of our involvement in Third Space, in January, we have an opportunity in London to come and be a guest client, to have a day of meeting and being coached by someone who's a participant, a student on our professional coaching course. And if you're interested, you can head across to thirdspacecoaching.com, and all the details are there, and that would be a wonderful way to get to meet you as well. So now this source. So this is called How to Tell the Truth. And it's by Paul Williams, who I tried to find out more about in this world where it's not so difficult to find out information about anybody who's in the public eye. And I couldn't find anything about him at all. But the way that I came across this was through Parker Palmer, whose writing I love deeply. And he posted this on his Facebook page some months ago, right when he wanted to say something about what it might be like to talk and listen to one another in a way that's called for in these times. So that's why I picked it. And as I posted it last night, I realized that we had quite recently talked about truth-telling. But one of the angles that was so beautiful in this poem, as you'll see, is what it really takes to find new ways to speak and new ways to listen when we've got stuck in something that's repetitive, where we find ourselves saying the same thing again and again and again, or listening in the same way. So I'm going to read it. It's called How to Tell the Truth. When you just have to talk, try being silent. When you feel reluctant to say anything, make the effort to put what you're feeling into words. This is a place to begin. Pushing gently against the current of your own impulses is an effective technique for dislodging and discovering your truth. How to tell the truth? Taste it. And remember the taste in your heart. Risk it from the bottom of your love. Take the risk of telling the truth about what you're feeling. Take the risk of telling your loved one your secrets. It's true, you might be misunderstood. Look and see if you're willing to trust yourselves to misunderstand each other and go on from there. When someone speaks to you and you feel yourself not wanting to hear it, try letting it in. You don't have to agree that they're right. Just take the risk of listening as if they could possibly be speaking some truth and see what happens. Listen as if you can't always tell what the truth is. Listen as if you might be wrong, especially when you know you're right. Listen as if you are willing to take the risk of growing beyond your righteousness. Listen as if love mattered.
How to tell the truth. When you just have to talk, try being silent. When you feel reluctant to say anything, make the effort to put what you're feeling into words. This is a place to begin. Pushing gently against the current of your own impulses is an effective technique for dislodging and discovering your truth. How to tell the truth? Taste it and remember the taste in your heart. Risk it from the bottom of your love. Take the risk of telling the truth about what you're feeling. Take the risk of telling your loved one your secrets. It's true, you might be misunderstood. Look and see if you're willing to trust yourselves to misunderstand each other and go from there. When someone speaks to you and you feel yourself not wanting to hear it, try letting it in. You don't have to agree that they're right. Just take the risk of listening as if they could possibly be speaking some truth and see what happens. Listen as if you can't always tell what the truth is. Listen as if you might be wrong, especially when you know you're right. Listen as if you're willing to take the risk of growing beyond your righteousness. Listen as if love mattered. My goodness, I so understand why you brought the source, Justin.
What are you seeing in it, Lizzie?
I think a lot of our sources have a lot in them, and I think this is a primary example. I feel like it's addressing this way that we are kind of pushing ourselves into the world rather than receiving what there is to be received. And in the pushing, there's a narrowing. And in the receiving, there's a kind of a widening. And that's what I'm feeling as we're reading this, is that it's a kind of ode to what it means to open. And to just see if I can let it in when I don't want to hear it. And actually, that's a practice that I've been... We talked about being undefended a few weeks ago and what it means to allow criticism even to be here and to receive. And it feels like it's in that same realm. And like the line, listening if they could possibly be speaking some truth. Like allowing yourself to get... even when you're completely riled and adamant that someone's wrong or something is wrong, how do we keep opening? So I feel really invited and held by the invitation of gently pushing against the current of our own impulses. You know, I think that's development in a way, you know, not just being our habitual, the way I listen is the way I listen and that's it. But to see if I can observe my natural wish or tendency in a conversation and see what I can do to gently push against that and let something else be there seems like a really big, major, necessary principle for being in relationship with people.
You just brought it in. This very early line, pushing gently against the current of your own impulses, which you said is really what development is. And I'm so with you. It seems to me that this is the developmental path for anyone, is to find the horizon inside which we live and be prepared to push against the edge of it. And it's so beautiful that he says, push gently against it. Just smash it, but to know that there is a horizon, And I was thinking about, I think I brought this because I need this all the time, this poem. Because I fall into, it's so easy for me to want to be right and want to feel right and get self-esteem from being the one who's right or who's wise or who's understood something in a sort of self-image that I get to carry with me and have to work quite hard to overcome, you know, to push against. And I, one of the things I came to see whilst you were speaking that I hadn't seen about this before was, I can't remember exactly the way that you said it, but I was thinking about a difficult interchange I had earlier in the week with someone who I really love, where I realized afterwards I was working with two kinds of rightness that it would have been really helpful to push gently against or to soften. So one was that what I was saying was the right thing, like I knew the truth about the situation. Mm. And it was painful to feel like I might not have that, wounding to feel like I might not be the one who really knew. But the second thing was, at an even bigger level, I think I was pretty certain that my way of understanding what was going on was the right way to understand. So quite aside from the content of it, like what had happened and all of that kind of stuff, that I knew how to listen. My kind of listening was the right kind of listening that was called for. And it so was only part of the picture. One of the resolutions of this difficulty was to soften enough to see, oh, there's so much more here than I can see. And there's so much for me to learn. And there's so many other kinds of truth here that are held in the heart and mind and body of this other person who I really care about. So that's why I love this invitation to push gently against the current. Here it is. Pushing gently against the current of your own impulses is an effective technique for dislodging, right, and for discovering. There might be something else yet that feels more deeply true here that I barely know, and it's not only mine. I'm very grateful for that language and for how it points us into both the content of what we're saying and the way in which we're, the very way in which we're in relationship.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what it was. The other person I was with said to me, you just always want to be right, which was not even the thing that we were having a disagreement about. And I could feel myself going, no, I don't. Which, of course, was exactly the thing.
It's so tricky, isn't it? It's so tricky. And just being, having any kind of presence in those moments can be so hard. You know, often we have to learn about it in retrospect and look back and say, oh yeah, I was really defensive there or something. Because in that triggered state, like in that kind of heightened, reactive, wanting to be right state, it's so hard to find that presence and that awareness that we do have in our right centered hearts and minds. It's so, so tricky. And so I think also what I appreciate about this is that it's pointing to this, for me anyway, this thing about having practices generally that can give us a chance to respond with this listening when the chips are down, you know, like when it's really bad and we're having a fight. What have I been up to in my life in general that helps me to be in that moment so that I'm not adding to the wounding or creating more hurt, but that I can hold myself at least a little better than in my purely reactive state to listen a bit deeper than I would normally have the capacity for. And this part about trusting ourselves to be misunderstood and to misunderstand and for there to be somewhere to go from there. You know, to feel like there's a space even for both of us to go wrong. And from there, there's more opportunity. There is still opportunity. And the practices that afford that, that allow us to heal and say, okay, so we've both misunderstood each other. This isn't, we're not able to get on the same page right now. Where can we go from here? It's so different than we're not on the same page. We're never going to be on the same page. Goodbye. You know, it's a different path. And I think this allowing possibility of other people's realities and really genuinely stretching ourselves open to another person's world is what a world that's got peace in it is made of. And a world that's got war in it is made of all of us bouncing off one another and thinking each other's wrong and I'm right. So I think, you know, that the levels on which this poem is applicable is really big. And it really, really, you know, he uses the word risk in this a lot. And it does feel like there's a lot at stake, you know, in the moment to say, well, maybe I'm wrong. It feels really like a death of some kind. You know, I have to let a piece of myself die right now. And I don't think I've got the capacity to do that. It feels that big, even when it's about something that small, relatively small. And so I like the fact that it's inviting us to take the risk, both in listening, but in the telling as well. Because to tell someone something true that's risky, it's got the same inherent risk as to say I might be wrong when I feel really, really, really righteous. Like it feels, both of those things feel risky. And it's making me wonder about connection, and do both of those things present the risk, because it's a risk that I might not be loved, that I might not be accepted, that I might not be either by myself or by somebody in front of me. It feels like a transgression of some kind that feels risky either way. Admitting my flaw or telling somebody something that feels like, oh, this is the thing they really will not love me for, and seeing. And yet in both of the times where I admit that I might be wrong even when I think I'm right, or I risk saying something that makes me really vulnerable, in both of those times, often what happens is an opening. And the opposite of what we think is going to happen happens, which is the person in front of us then goes, oh, thank goodness. And yet it was a thing we very much didn't want to do because we didn't think that acceptance would be there. And most often that's what we get met with. You know, when we get down from our high horse, somebody goes, oh, I can see you again now, because you're not just being kind of rampant advocate of your own opinion. So now I can connect with you. And or, oh, I kind of knew that already, or I sensed there was something going on, so thank you for telling me that thing. It's like we get welcomed again, which is this weird, strange thing about being a person. So you think that's not going to happen, so you've got a lot invested in not going there. And then yet, when you go there into that vulnerability, both of those places are very vulnerable. That's when people can connect. That's when people can go, ah, oh, I see you now. Because all of the bluster of your defense is down, and now we can have dialogue.
Seems to me from what you're saying that you were talking before about what it is that we feel or think is going to happen when we find out that we haven't got the whole picture, or that we're holding on to, you know, so tight that the other person can't get in, or the other person disagrees with us. And maybe one of the ways of talking about it, at least this is the way it occurs to me, is talking and listening to other people in this way is most difficult when what I'm doing is holding on to my own self-image as if it were, if there were any crack in it, I would die, which I think is how, often how it feels. And the bodily sense for me is, you know, I suppose in a way, one of the things I grew up with was a deep sense of the safety of relationships in the family in which I grew up. So when a conversation is rocky, it's really hard for me to feel safe in it. Really, really, really difficult. And that's why this sentence that he puts in the middle of the poem is so brilliant, where he says, look and see if you're willing to trust yourselves to misunderstand each other and go on from there. Which means, you know, among other things, so it's trusting something other than what we're talking about. And it's also, I find it really moving, this, to trust that I can feel hurt or betrayed or frightened or wounded or ashamed. And you might feel hurt or betrayed or frightened or wounded or ashamed or any number of other things. And we still do what we can to find a way to trust that that is part of our our interaction, this conversation that we're in. You know, and I suppose I say that for me out of my, this point he makes at the beginning about, you know, going against your habit and your preference, the habit and preference I know I have, the one that feels safe for me is always that the conversation feels safe and contained, like I'm not at risk, and that it's so difficult to do anything from there. And what a beautiful invitation it is. I'm wondering what it takes when we are in right in the heat of something that's really difficult to find a way to say, and we're feeling triggered and we want to get flung out of the conversation or clamp it down. What it takes to be able to look towards one another and say to one another, let's see if we're willing to trust ourselves to misunderstand one another. Let's see if we're willing to trust ourselves to be hurt together, to be confused. And what it takes for us to make that invitation to one another, to remember to take it, to make it. And I guess this thing that you're saying about practice is so important here, which is the place that we learn how to do this and how to be this is by having practices in our lives that keep on calling on, helping us cultivate this capacity to make ourselves available and vulnerable and to stay with feeling hurt and feeling ashamed and feeling confused. If we don't have those, it's way, way harder. And it's a really big ask to expect that in the middle of something superheated where I'm being triggered, I might have any access to any of those capacities at all.
Yeah. And just the practice of listening for something more widely than we ordinarily listen for. You know, I think listening's such a huge thing. And, you know, we can all feel like when someone's genuinely listening to the fullness of us versus when someone is listening in a particular way that they want us to be something that they're not telling us, but you can tell that there's a way of being listened to that's like allows you to say certain things or not say certain things. It's a kind of a way that our listening affords somebody else's sharing, and that's an interesting practice that we can all do. You know, we can all be in a taxi or on, you know, mundane conversations with the world that we're having and see what it takes to listen with presence and with curiosity rather than with our, like this is saying, our habitualness. And it's interesting to, I mean, I was on this weekend we've been on this big walk. We did a huge big walk on the South Downs Way. And it was such a lovely way to listen to people because I, you know, we walked for 7 hours, I think it was. And the kind of conversations that you can have and the kind of ways everybody changes position in the walk and you just talk to lots of different people. I was really wondering about my listening and wondering about how I was speaking to people and what kind of conversations we were having. And it was this very organic, glorious thing. But I noticed that it was different to speak to each person. And some people were up for listening to me, and other people, I wasn't interesting to them. You know, it was like, but I could feel the difference between all of the people as to what kind of listening that they were. And we're all feeling into that all the time. And I'm sure they were, you know, bringing forth what they could because of my listening. And it really is a very big determinant of what gets said and what doesn't get said. And of course, to understand the fuller picture allows us to have more understanding. It allows us to see the wholeness of something rather than half of it, which doesn't help us know the truth of things. So I feel like this thing, this listening thing, is such a powerful, important thing to enable us to collaborate with people, to get on with one another, to get through things. It's got so much in it. And I also feel like it's worth mentioning that there are certain relationships that both people might be conscious of listening, in which case it might be quite okay to name, oh, we're misunderstanding each other, can we go somewhere from here? But most of us, we're not in that scenario. Most of us are in situations where we might be conscious of listening, but the person in front of us isn't. And it's making me curious as to when it's less safe, what I have to feel within myself to be brave enough to take these risks. So I have to feel a lot of ground within myself if I'm with somebody who is not somebody's listening for my bigger story, but is listening for the very thing that they want to either be delivered or not. And in order to be vulnerable there is really hard. And when the environment's not safe and somebody would take my vulnerability and use it against me, for example, it's really, really tricky. So it feels like there's also some working out to do as to what kind of ground I have to be in order to discern where my practice ground is. Because it might be that I have to do far, far, far more of this listening and to be far, far more undefended the less conscious of this listening the person in front of me is. And I feel like I want to name that because it's just not the average situation to be in the world that everybody, I mean, you might be in some conscious community or something where this is a practice or something which is really beautiful, and a lot of us aren't in that. We might be in marriages where one of us is on this path and on a journey and our partner isn't, or our colleagues at work, or, you know, our families might not have been in this game of pushing against our current impulses. You know, we might not be in that environment. So I just want to name that and say that that's also to be remembered. I think I'm having a cup of tea
delivery. Oh, look. Tea delivery for Lizzie.
Thank you.
And juice. Yeah, this is such an important angle that you're bringing, both this last part about how do we navigate ourselves when there are real differences in how everyone's listening when you're with one another. But I want to go back and just name again this move that you made, which I'll say back in a slightly different way, but I think, which I hope captures the essence of what you were saying, Lizzie, is that our listening has a shape to it. And this is so important to see because it looks invisible. We can see the action of talking. It's really easy to go, well, you said this and I said this, and but the silent, still act of listening, it's essentially it's a it's not something that you can't see it with your eyes, but we can often feel the shape of one another's listening. And also the pace of one another's listening. So I was really struck when you said, if you walk for 7 hours with people, It affords a different kind of pace of listening, where not everything has to get resolved now, and I don't have to defend myself now. Like, we know that this can take some time. And it seems to me that maybe one of the most important things, just to pick up this last point you made about how do we navigate when it feels unsafe, or where we're in very different orientations to what it is to speak and listen to one another. My first response to it is the place for us to work is with our listening, and to not be so sure that we know what's really going on with the other person. You know, even when you said you might be in a relationship and one person might be on some kind of path and the other person isn't. And then I thought of all of the times that I've thought that I'm the one who's on a path and therefore I have the better listening. And so that immediately puts me right back in the difficulty that it's pointed to in this poem. It's like, well, I've got the right way of listening and you've got the wrong way of listening, because I've got the right way of listening. I'm much, much more, you know, which itself is a closing down. So how about that, as we come towards the end of our time, to have landed in this very rich field that a poem that is called How to Tell the Truth turns out, as much as anything else, to be about what kind of listener we get to be. Which sounds very obvious to say from here, but doesn't immediately present itself, seems to me, from the title and topic of the poem.
Can you say that again?
Not exactly sure what I said, but I'll do my best. That learning how to tell the truth is really deeply shaped by the kind of listener we get to be.
Which is I don't know what the word is, but like paradoxical or ironic or something, like, you know, it has that quality of making me go, oh, hold on, that's not like linear. I can't,
no.
But it's got that kind of space in it that you go, oh, hold on. So the way that I can tell the truth is determined by how I listen. That's a lifelong inquiry.
Yeah, that could keep us going for a very long time, couldn't it? So we've reached our time for this week. Some weeks it seems to me to go so quickly.
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
Like, we're done before we've even started. I'm very grateful to be in this long. You see, how about this? This is one of the things that this is, Lizzie, as well as a way of for us to talk to lots and lots of other people in the world and to be in conversation with people. This is also a long, many, many, many hours conversation between you and I that is unfolding in many different ways. I'm very grateful for that.
Me too.
So we'll end week 56 of Turning Towards Life here, and thank you, everybody. We will be back 9 a.m. GMT. So you probably spotted this, but the UK is off daylight saving time, so if you're elsewhere in the world, you can keep on accounting for that as the world reconfigures itself time-wise in this season. And we will really look forward to seeing you then. Bye.